Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Wow, the Woody Overton Window. I am Mike Agavino, sitting here with Woody Overton with your episode for Monday, July 15th, Woody.
Yep. What's up, y'all? And July is halfway over now, right? Holy smokes.
This is when the real hot weather comes in, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's hot. There's no doubt about that. And, but it's part of living in South Louisiana, and I'm sure it's hot everywhere, but I know it's a lot cooler in Wisconsin than it is here. So,
are you waiting for your clearance to travel, or you have to see a doctor to get a green light, or what's
I have to go back to the infectious disease doctor this week and have my blood test and make sure that bad shit's not in me anymore. And then I'll be clear to do whatever. So
then all hell's going to break loose, because you've basically been trapped in a dungeon for a month and a half.
Right. It's good. Yeah. Then actually, I have to hit the road the next week and on some stuff, but not to Wisconsin, it just in Louisiana, but be rolling again. And yeah, it's all good. Been a hell of a ride though. So
I know it, man. Well, you're looking good. You're almost all the way there. And I know you love nothing more than your new segment, Woody Does Gossip. So let's start a Monday Wow with a Woody Does Gossip story.
Yes, indeed. Y'all know I love this segment, right?
The enthusiasm just bleeding out of you.
Yeah, so here we go. You're probably familiar with the singer Lenny Kravitz. I was familiar with him. But you may not have heard of his daughter, the actress Zoe Kravitz, and I hadn't heard of her either. I had to Google her myself to see, who she was. But Zoe's star has risen even higher than her father's, and she's appeared in a number of blockbuster films like Batman or the Batman, Mad Max, Fantastic Beasts, as well as the Emmy Award-winning series Big Little Lies. Zoe is making her directorial debut with the original motion picture film Blink Twice, which is coming out in August. Now, Zoe revealed in an interview with Entertainment Weekly this week that Blink Twice isn't the title she originally chose for the film. In fact, she was hell-bent on keeping her original title and then suddenly changed her mind. Kravitz's original title for the film was, and y'all, I know this word is so offensive to so many people, but her original title for the film was Pussy Island. That's right, Pussy Island. and everybody's cringing right now. I can feel it. But she told Entertainment Weekly, "It was made very clear to me that pussy is a word that we, our society, are not ready to embrace yet." And she's probably right. But she added, "There were a lot of roadblocks along the way, whether it be the Motion Picture Association not wanting to put it on a poster or a billboard, or movie theaters not wanting to put it on the ticket." And she's right. But the Big Little Lies star co-wrote Pussy Island, I mean, Blink Twice, and it stars her fiance, Channing Tatum. Isn't that dude that played in the Mike movie or whatever?
Yeah, he's been in a ton of stuff.
Yeah,
he's very big.
He was like the male stripper or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, the story follows a tech executive played by Tatum who invites a cocktail waitress to his private island for some ill-fated fun. Now, Kravitz told Entertainment Weekly, "Interestingly enough, after researching it, we found women were offended by the word pussy. And women seeing the title were saying,
How much research did that take?
So. Like, ask anybody. Yeah. And the women were saying, I don't want to see that movie, which is part of the reason I wanted to try and use the word, which is trying to reclaim the word, reclaim from what, and not make it something that we're so uncomfortable using. But we're not there yet, she noted. And I think that's something I have a responsibility as a filmmaker to listen to, which means you aren't going to make a dollar and name it pussy. But anyway, she said, "I care about people seeing the film and I care about how it makes people feel." At the end of the day, she cares about it. She knew she was going to, nobody's going to go see that shit, right? What female is going to go into a movie called Pussy Island?
Well, I was trying to think. So do you remember the Bond film Octopussy?
Yes, but that was, I mean, the Bond girls almost always had some kind of sexual connotation to the name. This is just straight up. Octopussy, you know, wasn't all over everything and all that, right? It wasn't called
Octopussy. But I still bet back in the day, whatever, that was a 1970 something movie, they probably got a hard time, you know, had a hard time releasing that movie and probably, you know, received a lot of hell for it. And maybe it didn't do as well as other Bond films. I don't know. But yeah. Shocking that a woman she's a big star now would be so unaware, you know, that she would need the studio would need to do all of this research and all of this pressure from the Motion Picture Association would have to fall on her before she would consent to changing the title. I mean, if that title were left, that move, people are just going to assume it's a porn.
Right. I mean, and probably pretty much is, but who knows?
Yeah. Like I bet you right now, if I Google that title, there is a porn under that name.
Oh,
somewhere.
I'm sure.
There's gotta be.
I'm sure you're right on that.
Show
one.
Up.
So there you go. There you have another Woody Does Gossip.
Good job. Good gossip.
Not Willow, but Woody Does Gossip. Yeah.
With arm behind back.
Right.
Blind Twice is the actual name of that film, Blind Twice. And it's actually got a lot of people in it. And Channing Tatum is her fiance. And that is coming out in August. So
I don't know how you get from Pussy Island.
You can thinking about Pussy Island as you watch it.
I don't know how you get from Pussy Island to Blind Twice other than you want to get as far away from Pussy Island as you can.
Well, maybe we'll get Woody to do another segment where he reviews the movie after.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so. Well, brace yourself, hot dog eating contest fans, because the Nathan's Famous 4th of July hot dog eating contest has yet another scandal. You'll probably remember that we previously reported the last minute suspension of world record holder and 7-time defending champion Joey Chestnut from this year's event because Chestnut had become the spokesperson for a vegan hot dog company. So Nathan's kicked him out of their famous July 4th event. Well, now the competitive eating world has been rocked by a hard to swallow claim that a contender in this year's event cheated to beef up his score. The guy's name is Nick Weary, and he happens to be the husband of the women's division champion, Mickey Sudo. So it's all in the family. They take the sport very seriously. Both husband and wife are involved in the hot dog eating. He's being accused of using sleight of hand trickery in order to inflate his tally of eaten hot dogs during the recent 4th of July Nathan's event. The trickery allowed Weary to falsely place himself among the sport's elite contenders, according to two sources closely involved in the competition. Quote, 100% he cheated, one source told the New York Post last Tuesday. On the day of the competition, Weary's score was a respectable 46.75 hot dogs, which was good enough to put him in fourth place, where he would have earned like $1,500.
Right.
The grand prize is $10,000. Right. But that figure later jumped to 51.75 dogs on the official Major League Eating, the MLE results website, allegedly giving him credit for five full wieners more than he was actually served during the competition. Eaters' scores are tabulated based on the number of empty plates that are stacked in front of their spot after the allotted time is concluded. Any debris left uneaten on the top of the plate, you know, like bits of bun or chunks of hot dog, is subject to a judge's discretion about how much they deduct, whether they give you three quarters credit, half credit, whatever. So every plate on the competition table is loaded with five hot dogs. So each plate left behind should count for five hot dogs as the judges determine the participants' scores, unless, of course, like I said, they've left fragments and they deduct a little bit. Weary has been accused of stealing plates from another competitor's stack and putting them on his own stack to raise his score above 50. The reason that's important to raise a score above 50 is that is the sort of magic threshold in the sport that separates the elite eaters from the others. So if you can eat 50 hot dogs or more, you are considered elite. You get to travel to all of these events and they put marketing money behind you, et cetera, et cetera. So although the alleged score change didn't change his placement, he still finished fourth, even with the five extra hot dogs, it did bump him, as I said, into that magic, above that magic 50 figure. The accusations are no small matter in the world of competitive eating, which takes a dim view of cheating in any form. Videos of the event show that Weary was hovering around the stage well after the event was completed and appeared to pick up and move at least one empty plate, which he twirled in his hand end over end. In a text, Weary told the New York Post that he was aghast by the accusations, stressing that he, quote, stole nothing, and denying he, quote, demanded a recount despite mounting evidence to the contrary. Major League Eating, which sanctions these Nathan's hot dog eating contests and handles the official judging of the events, said that it conducted an official investigation after being made aware of these accusations. Major League Eating did nothing about this. I learned in investigating this that this was the first contest cheating scandal since the infamous 1998 scandal that no doubt you all remember, where this 5'6", 135-pound Hirofumi Nakajima of Japan took home the championship, but was accused of taking muscle relaxers in order to give him a competitive edge, cheating in hot dog eating contests, Woody.
It's
what does the world come to?
So stupid. And the fact that, I mean, I saw that contest every year. And of course, I've eaten Nathan's hot dogs in Vegas and different places. But, you got to cheat for that, dude. I mean, you just fucking should be ashamed of yourself. Yeah.
The crinkle fries are the best, though. Like, I might enter a crinkle fry eating contest, but a lot of scandal there in the world of Major League Eating. It's so funny how they talk about this. They really are like dying for respect and to be addressed as a real sport.
Like, hey, we're real athletes.
You're eating freaking hot dogs. It is not a sport.
I'm a real athlete. I can eat 50 hot dogs in however much time.
In 10 minutes, by the way. Yeah, that happens in 10 minutes.
It's crazy. Crazy. I don't really understand it.
If I had to eat, if my life depended on eating 5, I don't think I could do it.
Yeah.
Maybe 5.
I don't know. I mean, I guess the rules are like if they throw up or something, it doesn't count, or who knows.
I think you can puke and come right.
I think about the pie eating contest in Stephen King's, was it Stand By Me or whatever, where the boys are out and they find the dead body and all that. Most of them went on to be stars, and the one kid starts puking and then makes everybody puke. It was a story.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember. Yeah. Well, look, things could have been worse, Woody. You could have done that story instead of the Pussy Island story. So
yeah, well, yeah, both of them are about in the same category in my brain. Anyway, so I want to talk to y'all about our new sponsor of all the RLC network shows. And I've told you before, but the name of the company is Hero Care Packages, and they do exactly what you think they do. They create care packages that family and friends can send to their loved ones in the military. And I know many of y'all have, you lifers have sons and daughters and grandchildren and nieces and nephews and friends serving, right? And this is a great way to let them know how much you care. Hero Care Packages was founded by a military veteran, Jack Ray, who said, when we pulled into a port in the Navy as an officer, I was always brokenhearted when I saw sailors who didn't receive any packages. So what does Jack do? He created Hero Care Packages to fix all that.
Yeah, he did. And he made it really, really easy. It's really smart. So you just go to the site, herocarepackages.com, and you have a choice of all of these pre-curated packages that they have put together, or you can customize a package and choose the individual items that you want. You can even do a gift certificate and allow your hero to choose for themselves. So it's as simple as it can be. All you've got to do is go to herocarepackages.com and make your selection. Use the promo code RLRC at checkout, and you'll get 10% off your entire purchase. So join us in spreading positivity and gratitude to our heroes. Shop now and let them know that they are appreciated.
Good deal. Y'all do it and put a smile on someone who's serving's face, right? So down under in Perth, Australia. Now I know about Perth because I was supposed to do a show there, and it's in Western Australia, beautiful place. And we actually have a Dream Team moderator on the crew page, Shana VL, who's been a lifer since the beginning, who's from Perth. But I'm going to tell you about another female from Perth, okay? And this female was a meth addict. Now, police in Perth pulled over the 43-year-old woman who had recklessly exited a shopping center parking lot onto a busy highway. When the officer approached the vehicle, he could see the woman had a small dog with her in the car. As he attempted to engage with the woman verbally, he could tell immediately that she wasn't well. At that point, the officer told the woman he was going to need to search her and the vehicle. And as the officer stood alongside her vehicle waiting for the woman to exit, she took out a small package of her bra and, according to the officer, began to try to insert the bag of meth into her miniature dachshund's ass. Now, the package was later recovered by the police, right, claiming it contained about 2 grams of meth. And the incident was reported to the regional animal welfare office, and the woman's dog was seized, naturally. A vet examined the dog, which tested positive for amphetamine, but was not at risk. And the woman has been charged with animal cruelty, with RSPCA alleging she acted cruelly towards her dog by attempting to place a package containing illicit drugs into the dog's anus and knowing the dog's anal area was already infected and sore. crazy.
What? So she and did this on the regular?
The dog? Evidently. I mean, evidently. She did something with it. So an RSPCA rep said, if she has succeeded in inserting the package in her dog's anus, it's likely the methamphetamine would have been absorbed into the dog's body. Well, if the bag broke, yeah. The maximum penalty is a $50,000 fine and 5 years in prison. And she's due to appear in court on August the 2nd. Nice, right? I always said, you know, when meth came out, I was so happy because I was tired of chasing the same crackheads and shit every night. And the difference between a meth dealer or a meth user and a crackhead is a crackhead would throw the crack every time. Meth, they never throw it. They either try to hide it on their body or they run. And it, and you know, when you catch them, they still haven't gotten rid of it, right? Meth being so much more addictive than anything on the face of this planet.
Now, am I right that 2 grams would be a very small amount of meth to have?
A gram would be about $100 each. And so it's not that small. I mean, I don't know if this was ice and they smoked it or they were snorting it or banging it, shooting it up or whatever. But 2 grams is, I mean, that's enough to get her through her day.
It's not fucking sick. Lady, I don't know what the hell she had been doing to her dog for it to already have, what did they say? It was the dog's ass was already inflamed.
Already infected. Yeah. So maybe she was transporting a larger amount in the dog's anus and got 2 grams for her efforts. I don't know. But, I would hate to have been a cop who had to reach in the dog's ass and get the meth out. Hopefully the vet did that.
Well, I just looking at it, I think they stopped. I think she wasn't able to do it. She like effed it up and wasn't able to get it.
She got it close enough where they had to take the dog to the vet.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So, well, I don't know. That's the first I ever heard of that one.
Poor dachshund. I think that's Jim Chapman's got a dachshund. We should adopt an Aussie dog, Jim.
Right. And well, shout out to all our lifers and down under. We love you.
And if any of you are interested in adopting a dog, there's probably a dachshund looking for a happy home. Woody, do you know why I want to learn more Italian?
Why, Ago?
Because my niece is getting married next month, and that means a wedding full of these crazy Italians from out of town.
And when it comes to learning a new language, there's only one leader, Rosetta Stone.
Rosetta Stone's the most trusted language learning program, period. Well, I've come a good ways using Rosetta Stone, but it's time to take it to the next level. My niece's wedding will be great prep for a trip I want to take next year.
Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. No English translations. Rosetta Stone helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's designed for long-term retention.
And the True Accent feature is like having a personal trainer for your accent. Lifetime membership has all 25 of the languages for the rest of your life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off.
There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today.
That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 languages for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Woody, did you know you can't see a wrinkle? What we're seeing is the shadow inside the wrinkle. Top Beverly Hills plastic surgeon Dr. Lakey has helped countless celebrities achieve flawless complexions both on and off screen. He says the secret is to eliminate the shadow. And there are two ways you can do that. Fill in the crease itself and reflect light away from the shadow. Fortunately, he's found a way anyone can do just that to achieve a flawless red carpet look right from home. It's called Deep Wrinkle Filler. Deep Wrinkle Filler combines a unique blend of skin-like polymers and light-reflecting diamond dust to visibly fill in the look of fine lines and wrinkles. Best of all, this groundbreaking formula helps nourish the skin to improve its natural texture every time you use it.
Dude, I almost died a few weeks back. If you don't think that gave me some extra wrinkles, I'm in my 40s. I thought it was cool to have a wrinkle or two. Now I get it. Who wants wrinkles?
Agreed. And the best part for me is it's easy to apply, has a pleasing scent, and you notice a difference instantly. Go to BeverlyHillsMD.com/RLRC to get up to 68% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want to visibly fill in stubborn wrinkles, go to BeverlyHillsMD.com/RLRC today.
Yeah. All right, Woody. So we've been through the first two episodes of the With the Benefit of Hindsight podcast series that I produced, and we've had two discussions following those. And now this week we are going to talk about episode three. We call this segment Nittany Lying, and the episode we're talking about is the Paternos. So we left last week's episode with Woody and I essentially agreeing that the presentment's representation of an eyewitness account by a Penn State graduate assistant, now known to be Mike McQuarrie, of Sandusky sodomizing a boy in a Penn State shower ignited a panic and media frenzy that took the country by storm in just 72 hours back in November of 2011. We further agreed that Penn State's legendary coach, Joe Paterno, was unfairly swept up in that panic and declared a co-conspirator in a cover-up we both agree never happened. This week's discussion is based on With the Benefit of Hindsight, Episode 3, The Paternos. The episode is a first-person account by John Ziegler of how he was drawn into the investigation in the first place, and the shocking story of how he comes to realize that the Paterno family, led by Joe's son Scott, is not only uninterested in getting Ziegler's help, but actively working to sabotage his efforts to expose the truth. The episode chronicles how Zig is able to secretly record an in-person prison interview with Jerry Sandusky and shares a recorded phone conversation between Zig and Scott Paterno. And that conversation devolves into a shouting match as Scott attempts to get John to stand down and quit his investigation just prior to John making an appearance to discuss the case on the Today Show. So Zig has learned the identity of the so-called boy in the shower from the incident witnessed by Mike McQuarrie, who was the grad assistant. The boy's name is Alan Myers, and Alan Myers' story about what transpired that night is very different from any of the various versions of McQuarrie's story and really destroys the version that's told in the present. So we've gone back and forth about the significance of episode one, the date, because as an investigator, the date wouldn't have affected Woody's getting to the truth in the investigation. And so from his perspective, he didn't see the date as that important. My point is it becomes important because it's only by understanding that the date of the McQuarrie incident was incorrect that Ziegler was able to reverse engineer the story and identify Alan Myers as the boy in the shower. So with that evidence in hand, so this is 2013 we're talking about now. So this, remember, the story comes out in 2011 in November. By June, Sandusky has been convicted. In the fall of 2012, Ziegler goes to State College, Pennsylvania for the first time to do in-person investigating. And by early 2013, he secures this prison interview with Jerry Sandusky, where he sneaks in a recorder so he can record the interview. And from things he got from Sandusky, as well as other evidence he had put together, he was able to identify this now 20-something-year-old named Alan Myers, who was the boy in the shower. And Myers had been one of the closest members of Sandusky's charity, The Second Mile, to Jerry Sandusky. Jerry Sandusky had been a father figure to Alan Myers, had actually stood up for him at his high school graduation and spoke for him, attended his wedding. Alan attended Sandusky's mother's funeral. This was a very deep relationship. With the evidence that Ziegler's able to put together, he's planning to go on the Today Show and announce that he knows who the boy in the shower is, that his name is Alan Myers, and that he has testified that he was snapping towels with Jerry Sandusky in the shower. There was no sort of sexual contact of any kind, and there never has been, and that Jerry is, you know, the greatest and would never do anything like that, blah, 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 blah. And so Ziegler wants to take that story onto the Today Show, but there's a big problem. Scott Paterno doesn't want that story told, and he works along with the family consultant that they've hired, a Hollywood guy by the name of Jim Clemente, to discredit John Ziegler and to sabotage his efforts. And it's only afterward that Ziegler comes to understand why the Paterno family, and in particular, Scott Paterno, are working against him. And so this episode, you know, also shares the story of the relationship that Zig establishes with former Penn State and Pittsburgh Steeler great Franco Harris, and includes a segment where Zig breaks down while recounting a phone conversation that he had had with Franco, where, you know, he was giving Franco basically a graceful way out and saying, hey, the family doesn't want me investigating anymore. I understand if you want me off the case. You won't hurt my feelings. You can throw me under the bus if you want, et cetera. And Franco says, I am independent. I only care about one thing, and that is getting to the truth. And you're the guy that's going to find out the truth. And so we recorded this episode back in 2020, which is before Franco Harris's tragic death in 2022. Your initial thoughts?
Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts, but not really from an investigator standpoint. I mean, this is 2 hours of, they had a couple points in there, but the 2 hours of basically John's story of what transpired with him and the Paternos. And, you know, they like him going in and recording Sandusky because it's not allowed in Pennsylvania prisons to record. And he talked about having the pen, which I have one of those, by the way, that is a recorder. Mine's a recorder and it's a video recorder also, but and he talked about super gluing it shut and all that. And he got this, and I assume that we're going to get to hear this in later episodes, this interview from the prison, which is what I'm really interested in. I'm interested in the criminal case that develops. Now, Scott Paterno, I mean, that he was recording, I think he was recording the phone calls, he said, because he was expecting Sandusky to call. And so
there were two follow-up interviews he was supposed to do with Sandusky, right, that were phone interviews following his presidency.
And meanwhile, Sandusky's wife calls and is talking about the interview, saying, I assume it went well. And dumbass Paterno beeps in and it gets into a screaming match. Basically, you can't even understand what they're saying. Because Paterno was going off so hard. And so I get that. I get all that. Identifying the boy in the shower and the date. I understand that the date is important from that point, but from the criminal side, had McQuarrie's shit like they presented it at the grand jury been where he truly saw sodomy or whatever, you know, them having it's rape, it's not sexual intercourse, because he was a kid at the time, the date wouldn't have made a difference if he saw a criminal act and you got the date wrong or whatever. You're still going to be able to go back through investigation to prove that it was this kid, and this kid says, yes, this did happen. You're still going to get the bill. But obviously that's all fucked up. Obviously, the Paternos hate, other than the other brother, this was Scott Paterno hates Ziegler and hates everything that he's doing. And doesn't, basically, he doesn't want, from my take, he didn't want Ziegler to do anything because he keeps bringing up shit about Joe, right? And the dad. And, but one of the things, two things real quick. Jim Clemente is not only Hollywood, he's an actual FBI profiler, or was. So, and he, but of course, he, you know, went into Hollywood and consulted on like Criminal Minds and other bullshit. But he, you know, had a phone call with Zig before Zig did the interview and saying, you know, you can get him to confess and all this and whatever. Maybe he was hoping. I don't know. But other than that, I mean, I don't. And then he denied ever having the phone call with Zig on that. But I'm just telling you all everything that's in the episode. But from an investigator standpoint, there's not much I have to say about this. I mean, other than it's obvious why the Scott Paterno, who made the dumbass statement, you know, pray for the victims or whatever it was, that outside his dad's house was slow shade. Now, one thing I did take away from it is, and you correct me if I'm wrong on this, Joe Paterno is in the hospital dying, and one of the last things he says before he dies is find out the truth.
Yes.
Right. I mean, that's basically, and you know, the it would, if I didn't know him through you and the character of him, et cetera, it would raise red flags for me on Ziegler, having recorded Miss Sandusky and then Scott and then turn it off before he calls Franco to tell him that, hey, you know what, you could throw me under the bus or whatever, I don't care. And Franco stood up for him. But obviously, whatever state he was in was not a one party consent, because he mentions, well, if Scott Paterno wants to sue me or come after me criminally, the statute of limitations is up on that. So Louisiana is a one party consent. I don't have to tell you if I'm recording you when I'm talking to you. But that's not the same way in every state. So I know it's different here. It's different in a lot of states, but I don't know. I mean, I'm waiting to see the story develop. I want to hear the interview. I want to know, you know, everything that's coming up, the free report and all that stuff.
Right. Well, the importance of this episode is so that because most people, when they hear that the Paterno family did not support John Ziegler's efforts at investigating the case, that makes no sense to anyone. Why wouldn't the Paternos want Ziegler conducting an investigation that's going to exonerate Joe Paterno?
Yeah, and I thought about that, and I'm going to interrupt you. The one thing is, Scott already knows he fucked up in his statement outside to the people outside, you pray for the victims or whatever it was he said. And if their dad's already been fired, and all that, and maybe he's hoping that during the course of the investigation, first of all, he has to wonder as a son, holy shit, if this, as all these allegations come out over the years, holy shit, did my dad know something? And he's, you know, trying to protect him on a criminal level, which I don't believe he did at all. But, and if you don't talk about it, then the news won't report it. And then Zig is a journalist, but he's not a rape detective, you know, and what can he do to exonerate Joe Paterno? I mean, the story's going to get told regardless, and it's going to go to court. And
this is all happening after. So we've through court. Sandusky's already in prison. So this is in the aftermath, and it's really not about Sandusky at this point. Sandusky's not really on the radar. Ziegler is not in his mind thinking at this point that there's any chance that Sandusky is innocent. He is trying to understand whether Paterno and the other administrators that had supposedly covered up Sandusky's crimes were innocent or not.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, why are nearly one in three American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that doesn't turn into fat when you consume it. Instead, it turns into a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body.
So getting more MCTs in your diet is like flipping a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which flushes out excess fat and calories. And Dr. Gundry has created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it comes in a tasty drink form. It actually tastes good. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized.
So if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/RLRC and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. And again, that's GundryMD.com/RLRC.
Awesome.
All right, good deal.
Woody, I just don't know what to do with Wendy lately. She's getting close to the big 5-0, and she just does not seem to have the energy she is used to having, and says sometimes she feels like a wet sock on a busy highway.
I'll tell you this, Jim. Cindy's biggest struggles this past year was fighting the symptoms associated with menopause: hot flashes, mild mood swings, and sleeplessness. She had them all until she tried Hormone Harmony. She was amazed at how much Hormone Harmony reduced her symptoms and supported her mood and her general well-being. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon.
I have noticed that women can't stop talking about it on social media. I even saw a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And when I did my research, I saw that Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life.
So Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold. Hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas, no desire to be in bed next to someone, if you know what I mean. Hormone Harmony can help with all of these things.
For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code RLRC for 15% off today.
But Joe Paterno was never charged with that, correct?
He was never charged. He died 2 months after the story came out. So during
the trial, whatever said, and I'm sure we'll get to that, Joe Paterno is not being looked at as a suspect in covering up aiding and abetting Sandusky and molesting kids. I mean, that's well, so after the trial's over. Go ahead.
Yes, he is, because there were four administrators involved: Joe Paterno, Gary Schultz, Tim Curley, and Graham Spanier. The other three were all charged because they were alive. The only reason Paterno wasn't charged is because he was already dead. And so they'd torn down the Joe Paterno statue at Beaver Stadium at Penn State. So Joe Paterno was declared guilty in the court of public opinion. His reputation was destroyed. And no, he didn't get charged and tried because he died 2 months later, and his dying wish was, please find the truth, hoping that he would, you know, posthumously get exonerated. And so Ziegler is here, and he has the stage set on the top morning news program in the country. Matt Lauer is doing an interview with him live about the evidence that he has, and Scott Paterno doesn't want him to do it, is doing everything he can do to prevent it. And it's because he is so threatened by what Ziegler has found out, because if it becomes understood broadly, then it will become understood broadly that he's a fool. He went out on the front lawn of his house, legitimized Sandusky as a pedophile, saying there were victims, conducting prayers, ensuring that his father would get fired the next day. And so he is out protecting his own interests, not trying to exonerate his father or trying to learn the truth. He's trying to exonerate his father, but he's trying to do it in a way where he doesn't harm himself. And that's very tricky. Clemente, I think, was playing it straight. He assumed that Sandusky is guilty, like everybody did. And so he gave Ziegler a strategy that, in his experience, Clemente's experience, always worked with pedophiles, to draw them out in a conversation and get them to confess. Well, later on, when we fill in a lot more, maybe we'll understand why it didn't work. It did. It's not that it was a bad strategy. It's something else. And so I think episode important in understanding why there is not an alignment between Ziegler's investigation and the Paterno family. And that's because of Scott. It wasn't that you mentioned Jay Paterno, Scott's brother, who is about as different from Scott as he can be. You heard in the episode from Al Lord, a former Penn State Board of Trustee, who was on the board at the time of the firing and knows the Paterno family very, very well, who, you know, characterized Scott, I think, very appropriately as somebody who was out for himself, had political interests in this entire thing, and, you know, was playing a game driven by his self-interest, not a search for the truth. And so I think we establish, for somebody who is troubled by the question of why there's not an alignment between Ziegler and the Paternos, we answer that question in this episode, which is important to give John credibility as we march forward in the investigation, because there were people, and Franco is a very important figure, and there are others, but Franco was an inspirational figure in all of this for Ziegler, because here you have the most famous Pittsburgh Steeler of all time, the former player who was the closest to Joe Paterno, saying to Zig, keep going. You are helping. We need you. Keep going. And Franco, at Joe Paterno's funeral, walked up to Mike McQuarrie and said, what did you see in the shower? And McQuarrie told him he didn't see anything. He asked him what he told Joe Paterno he saw. And McQuarrie said, I didn't really tell Joe Paterno I saw anything. And to understand how Franco was viewed within this community, I mean, he is an icon in the western half of the state. And he knew that his former coach didn't do this. And he knew that Ziegler was number one. I mean, just a maniac. I mean, just somebody who won't quit. He is just going to keep digging, and he wanted the truth, and he knew that it would be really, really difficult because of all the biases that different people have that have an emotional connection to this thing. It'd be difficult for an insider to do an honest investigation. And so Franco and Ziegler become joined at the hip in this, which is why Ziegler gets so emotional during that, the conversation you hear with Franco during the episode.
Yeah. Well, I mean, looking forward to getting into the meat of the matter. I'll say now, and from experience, the other three, and Joe Paterno, they're child molesters are not going to involve anyone else or let anyone else know about the crimes they're committing. First, the preferential offender, they groom their victims or setting up. They're not, they're using their position, and they're not going to, they're too smart to let anybody else. Any normal person except another child molester is going to go report it. If they, unless you're raping the kid also, you are going to go report it, period. And so I don't believe these other people had any direct knowledge or partook in any of the rapes or anything else. And at the end of the day, there's one person that's doing, or they got convicted by Jurious Peers for molesting 40 different counts of molestation, not 40 victims.
Well, what we might do, I'll look at this and we can talk about it during the week, is the next episode is entitled The Administrators. And it very much focuses on who these individuals were, who Graham Spanier, the president of Penn State at the time, Gary Schultz, Tim Curley, who they are as people, and really tears apart the cover-up theory. You're already past that. And so I may recommend to you that, hey, we take 2 minutes to do a synopsis of that episode,
right,
and the stuff that is there, and then move to episode 5, which I think is more meat on the bone that you really want to get to. It's as Zig starts to realize, oh, wait a minute, so many of these things I'm learning are causing me to question whether Sandusky actually did this.
Right.
And he starts. And
I think that's what everybody is interested in. You know, I hate it. I mean, Zig is naturally telling a story here and all the parts that go in it. But this to me, not saying this isn't all important, because it's important as hell, especially with Zig, right? But it's kind of like the date thing. Let's get into the meat of the matter about Sandusky, and then I can give you a professional perspective, where right now I'm just like everybody else and basically and listening to it. And by the way, y'all, we put the link, Cindy put the link to the episodes on the crew page and on our social media. So you don't have to go looking for them. Just go to our social media and click on the link, and it'll automatically play the show for you.
I think the episodes that we're putting in there are also commercial free. So,
right. And so, like you said, Mike, then let's do that. That you know, get a synopsis on who they are, and then so the next one we're really going to look at and post up will be, what's the name of it? The episode after next, after the administrator. What's the next
one? I think episode 5 is called In the Beginning, and we go back and look at it. We start to tell the stories of the quote unquote victims.
Right. So, okay. So then whatever it is, you'll get to Cindy and we'll get it shared everywhere, and I'll get it done before next week. And then, so the importance of the story, you can tell who the administrators were, and then we'll get into the meat of it. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Good deal.
Awesome. Yeah, and,
all right. Well, we love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. Thank you for continuing to like and share and, you know, all that good podcaster shit.
All that good podcaster shit. All right, folks, enjoy the rest of the week. We will talk back at you on Friday. Thanks, Woody.
All right, buddy. Peace.
Aglets.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home.
At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.